Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning, everyone. Happy Wednesday. It is December the 27th. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas. We're excited that our Savior was born. The gift was given. Wonderful counselor. We are so excited here at Faith Radio. So thanks for tuning in this morning. And the weather is kind of dominating the news today. It is quite cold here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. We were looking at about 6 below this morning. But Erie, Pennsylvania, dreaming of a white Christmas. They got more than a white Christmas. They got 60 inches of snow. That is paralyzing. I can't imagine you do anything other than try to shovel. That would be, I remember the Halloween storm of, I think, about 99 here in Minneapolis. We got 36 inches of snow in 2 days, and I thought you couldn't possibly deal with more snow. And Erie, Pennsylvania got 60 inches, so good luck. I'll have to pray for them. We have a great show today. My friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese, who usually comes to me via Skype, is actually in studio this morning. I might make him stick around for a little bit of the show today. But that's how we're going to get started. Ken Kaiser is going to be in shortly after that. Then Ben Johnson from the Acton Institute, not Action, but Acton. He'll be with us a little bit later in the second hour. And then David Wheaton, my friend and colleague. We've got a great show. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, Patrick's here in studio. We'll be right back.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain.
And, of course, that music means my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese, is on the line. Oh, wait a minute. He's actually not on the line. He's in studio. How cool is that? Good morning, Patrick.
Morning. Yeah, normally via Skype. Today via skates.
No, it is cold and icy out there.
I still am trying to figure out that was it the Vikings that initially settled here?
I think so.
You know, as they were heading south, they're going, hey, that's enough. That's enough. getting kind of balmy.
Yeah. So it was probably in July they stopped and said, what's wrong with this place?
Yeah, exactly. Come on. It can't get much colder than where we were.
Oh, so let's talk about your Christmas service you attended, because you are at Hope Lutheran, or what is it
Lutheran
called?
Church of Hope.
Lutheran Church of Hope in Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah.
And your pastor, Mike Householder. Yeah. I've had him on the show once. Great guy, really smart. And talk about what your church did on Christmas.
Well, they did not give away money.
Oh.
No, over the years, as the church has grown, and, you know, they started 23 or 24 years ago with a dozen members, and I'm not even entirely certain if it's 20,000. I don't know what it is anymore. But a lot of people will go there, especially for the holidays, even if they're not members of the church. So Christmas services, it used to be it was 8 or 9 or 10 or I don't even know what it was. So this year they said he couldn't talk for 2 weeks after he finished up those services. So they rented out the Wells Fargo Arena, which seats about 16,000, and then if you remove the ice or the basketball court, you can put people on the floor. So it seats a few more, I think, then. And we decided to go to the 11 o'clock service, and I thought, well, we're being pretty clever. We're getting there about an hour early. And I get to where the exit ramp is, and I said, this is not going to be pleasant. So I was on the exit ramp for 20 minutes just trying to get off the freeway to the street.
Yeah, and were there an hour early.
I was there an hour early with all the other smart people.
Right.
Yeah. Turned out the really smart people showed up at 11:05 and got right in.
Yeah, yeah.
It was packed. They had only had the one level open up. There are three levels to it, and they just had to keep opening up levels. And it's also one of those things. I'm such a negative person sometimes. I have to watch that side of me. And so as soon as I hit that exit ramp, I was like, you know, I turn around and go home. That's it. Yeah. I can't deal with this, you know, because my problems in life are so severe, right?
Right.
You know, I can't, for Christmas Day service, you know.
Sacrifice.
Yeah, you know, just by actually waiting in line. And then, you know, by the time I find a parking spot and, you know, you buy the big foam finger, Jesus is number one. Because they were in an arena. They had stuff for sale. And then, of course, they've got the whole thing. They got coffee and cookies and cakes and things. And I'm just waiting in line for a cup of coffee. And I said, I'm leaving. I can't take it anymore.
I can't wait anymore.
And we have two people in scooters that I was kind of sent on the reconnaissance, you know, I was on the information gathering mission because they were coming in the next vehicle. And every handicap section is taken. And then they open up the third level. And I find one section that's got a place for scooters. But the rest of us are going to have to stand. So, of course, my attitude is, I'm just going to turn around and go home. I've had
I can't stand.
And then the service starts. And it was the most unbelievable thing I'd ever witnessed. And, you know, the only good thing that happened with my attitude is before it started, I said, look, if you go home, it's just going to be a day like any other.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you like to have an unusual day every now and then?
Yeah.
Even if it involves a little bit of hassle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was spectacular. It was spectacular. Everybody was handed this little bracelet.
Talk about that. That was amazing to me.
Yeah, so they give you this little bracelet, and they said, don't worry about it. You know, it's got buttons on it. You can push and you can make these lights go on. But at a certain point in the service, well, we get to where they sing Silent Night. And the singer that came in is one of the finalists on The Voice this season. He's one of our he's one of our church members.
Oh, good.
And actually, he was offered singing at the halftime for an NFL game that day, and he said, nope, I got to do my church thing.
Cool.
He turned down the NFL.
So did a lot of people.
Yeah. Anyway, Silent Night starts playing, and somebody sends out a computer signal which goes to all these bracelets that 16,000-plus people are wearing, and they just start to light up. And the place, they wouldn't let us have candles.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they didn't want 16,000 mini flames next to flammable material. But it was beautiful. The lights go down, and suddenly these bracelets just start lighting up, some of them in green and red and white, and it was amazing. I go, look at that solution to that problem. You can't light candles? Okay, what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how many of these things they ordered.
Yeah, they're probably a little spendier than candles, too. But, wow.
Well, candles you leave behind, and everybody took the little bracelet home. And they said, take it home. You know, hang it on your tree. It says Lutheran Church of Hope, Christmas, you know, 2017. We can't use that next year.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
So, I took 52 of them home. They were so cool. They don't work anymore, so I can't figure out. I don't have the computer to send it a signal, so I can't get them to light up.
So did people, like, raise their fist, their hand in the air?
Yeah.
Or?
Oh, it was gorgeous. I thought I had, maybe I tried to take, you know what? I think I had sent you a picture, and I bet you got the picture, and you said, I don't even know what's going on there.
Yeah, I did get the picture, and I couldn't tell what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I sent you one of the arena. It was... You know, you struggle sometimes with a church that has grown that big, and you say, this is huge, and golly, couldn't they use all this money for all this stuff to help people? And actually, part of, I think, the reason that this church has grown is they wanted to be a 50-50 church. They're well over 70% giving. I think they're approaching 80%. They've paid off their mortgage. And so they know that these big services really bring a lot of people in that are being introduced to the church and even to God and to Jesus, maybe for the first time. You know, they stepped away from the church 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
And they see this and they say, what's going on here?
Yeah. And we're making Jesus a big deal and going for
star of the show.
Star of the show. So we're stopping at nothing to make it a big deal. And people come in and go, wow, this really is a big deal.
It's really a big deal.
Yeah.
What an amazing experience. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean that I will, that negative part of me when I'm approaching the next time, like if they do Easter and they do something, that I won't go through the exact same.
You and I are a little bit alike in the regard that no is a default of ours, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like, I don't know if I want to do this now.
Yeah.
20 minutes on the exit ramp.
Yeah, exactly.
There's an International House of Pancakes right there.
That's international.
And it's international.
Right, they got that German, that Dutch baby pancake.
It's not just in the U.S., it's all over the world.
It's all over the world.
You can't miss that.
Yeah, you can walk out with a little a flag on a toothpick.
I know, it's awesome.
Yeah, I know. My wife, even today when I said I was coming into this, she says, you know, you can say no. I said, no, I can't. She said, you just said no. I said, Oh, I did. I was so excited to come into the studio instead of just doing it on the phone. It's easier to do things face to face. But I think my default is, that's going to be a hassle for everything.
I know.
For almost everything.
I know.
And if I can get past that little bit of resistance, I can come up with a million excuses. The parking lot. Oh, yeah. Did they shovel it?
I know.
July. Yeah, but still, if I remember back in January, I almost slipped and fell in that parking lot. And I said, I'm never going back till I get that thing cleaned up. I can make up any excuses.
Yeah, and I love the fact your church had three services, not one. So, again, 16,000 people times three?
Yeah, I don't know what the final tally was. Yeah. If they filled it three times, I would be stunned.
I would be too.
But maybe not entirely surprised because when we got there, they had only had the level one opened up, and they just kept opening up levels, saying people are still coming. They weren't supposed to. We thought we'd get 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. We thought, wow, that's
and 16,000 voices singing some of those great old Christmas songs must have been powerful.
It's chilling. You get the goosebump thing.
Oh,
going.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
All right, Patrick, let me take a little break. When we come back, more with Patrick Albanese in just a minute. It's 16 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour, and we are back in the studio. I have Patrick Albanese in studio with me today. Very excited about that. He is in town working and brought his family, and the kids are here, and they're on the pull-out bed in the hotel room.
They're in the pull-out bed.
Just starting to complain about that, aren't they?
Yeah, they're just saying, these aren't that comfortable.
Well, yeah. You got new problems, pal.
Yeah, when you get big enough where you can't really jump on the bed.
Yeah.
When you do and it collapses, you go, hey, this isn't a fun bed anymore.
Oh, when you're a kid and you pull out a sofa and it turns into a bed, you can't think of anything cooler. I get to sleep. Here's a bed.
I know that.
Then you get a little bit older and you go, these aren't that comfortable.
Yeah, the things that you, as a kid, you used to think of as sort of massage bars.
Now they're pokey bars.
Yeah, they're pokey bars. You say, I'm not going to wake up walking straight tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is going to be a little bit of a rough morning. But
so how did your kids do with the gift department? Did they have a lot of requests, or were they just, as long as we're together?
It's like, no, they're not quite at that point.
Okay.
Although, the constantly revisited and revised Christmas list, which, I find kind of humorous. We did that elf on a shelf thing.
What is that?
So, you buy this little stuffed elf, and the kids can name it. And then the elves, we put them out at Thanksgiving. And every night, they go back to Santa and report on the kids' behavior. This is a terrific manipulative tool. And, so we thought this is great.
Is that where you hide it in the house in a different place every night?
Yeah, or you do fun things with it. So, they'll, my wife will turn like marshmallows in to make it look like they're having a snowball fight. They're fun.
Okay.
And then they each have their own reindeer. And now evidently we bought the accessory pajamas too. So it's turned into a very pricey endeavor. And instead of working the way it was intended, where, they're supposed to be watching the kids' behavior, the kids just kept attaching addendums to their Christmas list, saying, since you're going back to the North Pole tonight to report to Santa on how I am, add this.
Okay.
This is getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they would start over. And then occasionally, my son would just, write out a Christmas list that says, and $50.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
And just 50, tack on a little cash?
$50.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, we're getting ready to go see Santa at the mall. And we have themes on our Christmas. We don't necessarily pick the theme. A couple of years ago, we had a very dangerous Christmas where it seemed like, well, that was more than two visits to the ER. So that's a very dangerous Christmas, just one of those things. Or everybody's sick.
Yep.
The almost didn't happen Christmas.
Right.
And this year was very Hamilton Christmas. Because my wife and I got to go see Hamilton, and then we had the soundtrack, and the kids love it, and everybody loves it, and everybody's Hamilton, and Hamilton's coming to the Civic Center in Des Moines, and people are like, oh, Hamilton. And so the kids got a bunch of these Hamilton presents, and it's a couple days before Christmas that we're going to see Santa, and they're making out the newly revised list because the elves have taken it. Santa's got that old one. Let's put the ad on. And then, you only got like three things on it. It's like, well, Santa knows the other stuff. And my son is such a sweetheart. He'll add things like, and a new car for dad. Because, you know, whenever I make the mistake of talking about how expensive things are, so he's like, look, this is the time. This is when you add. This is when you, you know, if you want something,
yeah,
this
go
is
for it.
Now you don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
This is fantastic.
Yeah.
So they just think everything in the world, of course, is free. And they're getting ready and they're making the list. And my son says, should I put Hamilton tickets on the Christmas list? And my daughter says, oh, no, even Santa can't get Hamilton tickets. So now, unbeknownst to them, we did get them Hamilton tickets.
Okay.
In fact, we bought them for the whole family.
Uh-huh.
And I was kind of hoping that the family would not be excited so that I could scalp those tickets and maybe pay off the house and burn the mortgage. I was kind of hoping. But anyway, my daughter cried when she got that gift. She just, it's just a show. And it's a really good show. But I said, wow, I haven't seen my daughter cry over receiving something.
Yeah.
You know, I see she's getting old enough where it's like, you're doing happy tears. You're happy tear kid now.
Wow.
Not just crying over, something went wrong or I didn't get what I wanted.
Well, that's interesting.
But I said, I've never seen the happy tears. Oh my gosh.
These are tears of joy.
Yeah.
You've never seen those.
I don't know when those kick in. How old do you have to be?
I don't know.
I've never had tears of joy.
I haven't either.
Which kind of brings a tear to my eye right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a little choked up.
I'm a little bit, but that, yeah. I thought this is the first time I think I've seen her do tears of joy.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Well, I hope that we do more of the tears of joy instead of the tears of we're out of milk.
Right, right. So now, did you purchase these Hamilton tickets on your MasterCard? Because MasterCard said it was the biggest Christmas in history.
We purchased them on multiple cards.
Okay.
There were 55,000 people in the online waiting room.
For how many tickets?
20,000. But you know, the 50,000 people online are buying more than one ticket.
Right, right.
So, and there were 2,000 people in the lobby at the Civic Center. So we had a network of, and we managed to successfully buy 12 tickets for the same night.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you had to open up some new credit cards, didn't you?
We're homeless now. That's the shame of it.
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the way the retailers were smiling this year? I mean, they have to have some credit has to be due to the economy and the tax cut and the optimism people have.
Yeah, I saw that Barack Obama was trying to take credit for that. I said, so for 8 years that you're in office, everything that's gone wrong is the previous guy's fault.
Right.
And the next guy comes along going, oh, yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
Because this guy's kind of goofy to me. You have to. And really, what are sales? You know, it's just optimism. You don't purchase anything unless you think you have the money or you think it's coming in or you're feeling positive about it, really. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people spending all this money, they're upbeat. There isn't a magical thing that, I mean, Trump did a lot of things, I'd say, that, helped create that atmosphere. But it's really an attitude,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? That people are saying, I'm feeling kind of chipper.
Mm-hmm. I think I read 173 million Americans will benefit from this tax cut. That seems like a fairly big number.
Well, and I thought, what a horrific idea, whoever put together the Democratic talking points saying, hey, just belittle the small amount, $40 a week. Now, a couple of years ago, Obama actually made a little video spot, I think, when they were talking about, hey, this thing that I'm doing, that's $40 a month in your pocket. And you're going, well, these people are getting $2,000. And I don't know, the last election, Sandra Fluke was complaining that she didn't have $10 a month to pay for her birth control pills,
mm-hmm.
and that the taxpayer should pay for it. And you're going, so now when you're getting $2,000, now it's not very much money. So I don't think that's a winning message to say, oh, gosh, it's not very much money. It's like, okay, two options. Either, make it more,
mm-hmm.
or are you saying that the government would do a better job with my money than me? How about no?
It's always how about no
how
when
about
it comes
no?
to your money.
Yeah, I thought, what is not very well thought out thing that are you going to run on this in 2018 saying, hey, that tax cut you got? We'd like it back.
Yeah, yeah.
So why don't you vote for us and we will take your money back?
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to work.
No.
So maybe turn a little bit more positive.
Yeah. Now you have nowhere to go right now, right? So
no.
Stick around.
Okay. I'm just warming up the car.
Yeah. Ken Kaiser's in next. Okay. And so stick around. It's 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back with more of the show in just a minute.
I'll be home.
Good morning. It's half past the hour. We'll take a little break for news. And when we return, we've got Dr. Kent Kaiser in studio. And still in studio, my friend Patrick Albanese from prestigious West Des Moines. We'll be back in a minute.
Take a look in the 5 and 10. When all is said and done, the hope for a nation is conformity to God's ways. This is Jim Garlow. And that hope for a nation includes our own. So what's holding us back from that? Secularists certainly don't believe this, and frankly, sometimes I wonder if most Christians really get it. If we're anti-biblical in our national life, it's self-destructive. We certainly know that we can't operate as an individual against God's ways and succeed. We certainly can't operate as a family against God's ways and succeed. What makes us think we can be anti-biblical as a nation in some of our fundamental policies and somehow be preserved? It's preservational of all that's good, not only for our own sake, but for our national good as well. Whether or not America succeeds or fails will depend on the extent to which we embrace biblical Christian values. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Good morning. It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour, and you know that music means Dr. Kent Kaiser is in studio. Morning, Kent.
Good morning.
And Merry Christmas.
You too.
You were on the North Shore of
Lake
Superior.
It was cold.
And it must have been extra cold. What was the tempy?
Well, I don't know. Minus 10, 15, who knows?
Yeah.
The truck groaned when I started to go to church. But you know what's great about up north on the North Shore, though, is that the lake is always open for the winter. It doesn't freeze over. So
that's true.
You always have sort of this illusion of spring, even when it's like 25 below.
Yeah.
It's open water. It's just, you know, comforting.
And the truck that was groaning is a relatively new truck, isn't it?
It is.
So,
but, yeah,
that's
just not accustomed to being that cold. That's
no,
all.
No. All right, let's look at 2017 in review. What do you got for me?
Well, I think that there's a lot more than what maybe the mainstream media is telling people. You know, the big picture is that, you know, Trump actually got a lot done, and the Republicans in Congress actually got quite a bit done. And there's a lot of stuff that Christians could be happy about. The number one thing I think everybody recognizes is that there was the appointment of Neil Gorsuch to mm-hmm. the U.S. Supreme Court. And now, just kind of moving into a prediction for next year, too, I'm predicting that Justice Kennedy will retire at the end of this session, which would be at the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, then Trump would nominate somebody similar to Gorsuch, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would have the first time we'd have a conservative court for the first time in decades. They always had sort of some swing vote in the, you know, kind of you couldn't count on them, and that's what Kennedy is right now. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
he's conservative and with a Christian perspective, and sometimes not. So there's that. But some of the other things, of course, we saw the tax bill pass at the end of the year, which is great for families. They've doubled the...
That's not what the Democrats are saying.
Oh, of course not. But you know what's kind of funny? I saw a video on you know, that somebody did where they presented the current tax plan, the tax cuts that we got, as the Bernie plan, the Bernie Sanders plan. And when they were touting it as such to people they were interviewing, they were loving the plan. And then they told them, well, you know, this is the actual plan that passed. And they're like, well, why didn't they highlight these parts? Well, they did. But the mainstream media doesn't tell you this. So that was this is a major thing. And I think people are going to benefit greatly from it in this coming year. And I think people can be really happy with that having passed. Now, unfortunately, it passed only with only Republican votes. It would have been nice if it could have been bipartisan. And the other thing that's interesting, Bernie Sanders himself, in an interview just the other day, when asked about the middle class tax cuts, said that, yes, they were a good thing. And if only they could have been permanent. I think looking at 2018, I doubt that they'll do this. But for me, their number one agenda item when they come back after break should be to make those middle class tax cuts permanent
mm-hmm.
and let the Democrats vote and put their money where their mouth is. And if they vote against that, man, then the Republicans would really have something to run on for next year. But I think that they couldn't. I mean, I think that Bernie Sanders and the rest of them would have to vote to make those permanent. They should just go ahead and do it and think of, you know, how much the American people would benefit and appreciate that going into the next election. One other thing that was in this bill for the tax cut was the repeal of the individual mandate that Obamacare had. Now, this is something that that benefits especially young men. You could look at the people who were where basically what they were doing is taking from young men and young women too, but more men actually because they're less likely to use health care, making them purchase insurance. And basically, they were subsidizing people who were older. I mean, so it was basically a tax on the young to subsidize old and sick and whatever. And so terribly unfair and terribly unfortunate to be shackling young people who are just starting out in their careers with this effectively a tax. Because there's a lot of people. I can remember times in my life when I was young, I didn't have health insurance. I didn't want health insurance. I didn't need it. It's healthy. You know, I took care of myself. And there's a lot of people, a lot of young people out there, men and women, who are saying the same thing. They don't want health care, health insurance. Why should they have to pay for it?
Or a catastrophic plan. I had a catastrophic plan. Right. Where, you know, I paid $30 a month, I think, and then it covered, I had to cover the first $1 million, and then they picked up after that.
Right.
And the other thing is, like, with going back to the courts, that Trump has tilted the courts in a conservative Christian way. Also at lower levels, not just at the Supreme Court. Now, some people are a little bit disappointed with some of his district court picks, but when you get to the appeals court level, he's made some pretty good...
How many judges, Ken?
It's like a dozen, which is more than at that federal level, which, you know, is phenomenal. It's more than, you know, anybody.
I think Reagan was eight or nine in his first year.
And there's more just waiting... You know, just after this Christmas break, I think there's several others, including Justice Strauss from Minnesota, who is probably going to be confirmed. And so that's another good, solid conservative justice. And also, another thing we could be happy about is the regulations that are being cut. And another thing, of course, on the global stage is ISIS is in retreat. Mm-hmm. And that's what's phenomenal. You know, the president came in and said, look, we can work with Russia on certain things, including ISIS. That's what we did. We sort of stepped back and said, Russia, you take care of ISIS. And they did. And, of course, we've been involved. But we let somebody else lead on that. And in a good way, we were able to collaborate with Russia. Now, obviously, there are other issues with Russia. But where there's an opportunity, as Trump said during the campaign, to work with them, we should. And here's an example of where it's really worked. Now, now what I predict for next year, though, in regard to ISIS, is the next fight is going to be in cyberspace. We've basically prevented them from having a caliphate in any kind of a physical sense, but the next threat is going to be their cyber warfare.
Mm-hmm. So, how do you think that will manifest, Kent?
Well, I think that they could do any number of things to sort of clog up business. They could there's just all kinds of things they could do. The transportation system, they could, you know, who knows?
I mean, Apple's already slowed down my iPhone. Isn't that enough?
right. But I don't know where it'll come. And that's the problem with cyber warfare is you just don't know where they're going to try to attack. I mean, we've seen, for example, when North Korea has engaged in cyber attacks on the United States and what's happened to some of the entertainment companies and something similar could happen from ISIS very easily. And I think another big thing that we can take, you know, really be proud of for our president is the more recent move where he decided that we're going to move our embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. I think that we've talked about this many times before, where as Christians, we should hope that we would have Israel and the Jewish state actually looking over the Christian holy sites, because we've seen what's happened when Islam has been in charge of, you know, Christian holy sites in Iraq, Syria, Pakistan, Afghanistan, elsewhere, how they just destroy, they don't just destroy Christian artifacts, but they destroy any other religion, even dead religions, which, you know, how could those possibly even be a threat? But we've seen what happens with Christian holy sites when the Muslims are in charge of that territory. So I think that this move of the embassy to Jerusalem is a really positive thing for us. And then there are a lot of other things too, like such wasteful things like the Paris Climate Accord, which was non-binding, and there are other Obama-era regulations on things like environment that were actually quite ridiculous. We're seeing an uptick now in mining and drilling for oil and other things like coal. And so, I mean, the economy is, you know, going gangbusters now. And, it, you know, is really shackled by a lot of these regulations. They were, like, just really over the top and excessive.
Yeah. I remember, Patrick, you were telling me about regulations where President Trump said for every new law, there's going to be two regulations that are going to go away. And then you corrected me with something, which was shocking.
That was the campaign promise.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to slash two for every new regulation. And he came out. It was a very clever video a week or two ago. And he says, well, we didn't quite do that. We did 22. They slashed 22 regulations for every new regulation.
Did you know that, Ken?
Yeah, and he had a great visual with piles of paper.
Oh,
yeah.
It was a mountain of paper.
Yeah, he had a good good PR person behind that put up the piles of paper comparing what used to exist to what exists now. It's
great. Because we are overregulated. I mean, when you have to go to 2,000 hours of beauty school to learn how to braid hair, you know, and that's just yet another regulation that slows down the economy, slows down the innovators. If somebody wants to open a little business, they can't make that kind of investment.
Mm. All right, Kent, let me take a little break. And Patrick, thanks for being here with us, continuing to stick around. It's 15 minutes till the top of the hour. More with Dr. Ken Kaiser in just a minute.
Melikilikimaka is a thing to say on a bride.
Good morning. It's 13 minutes till the top of the hour. Our friends in Hartford, the city of Hartford, is activating its severe weather protocol as frigid temperatures have arrived in that area. Apparently, if you're in need of shelter, you're urged to call the state info line 211. And they're also suggesting you stay indoors as much as possible to protect yourself against the bitter cold. We are back with Dr. Ken Kaiser and my friend Patrick Albanese from prestigious West Des Moines are in studio this morning. And Kent, during the break, somebody said that Jesus would have been a socialist. What do you think about that?
Well, no, I was hearing that yesterday from one of my liberal friends. Like, Jesus conducted himself the way Jesus lived his life. He would have been a Democrat. That's what they literally were saying, that because he had these socialist tendencies. And I'm like, I don't see where you found that Jesus would have been a collectivist in any way, shape, or form. First of all, I don't think that Jesus should be used for political purposes. I don't think Jesus would have been, you know, one party or the other. And I think that he was pretty agnostic about what governmental structure we should have had. You can't find any point in the Gospels where he talks about what the governmental structure really should have been. And he was always worried more about personal salvation. It wasn't about some collective salvation either. And so I'm led to believe that he was really much more concerned about individuals than he would have been about some collective. And he never says in the Gospels or anything to the disciples, go and form a collective and then go to Jerusalem and you know, he just never says anything like that. It's just,
and get to work on health care while you're at it.
And one example that we have of, you know, the thing is that the liberals are always saying, like, oh, he's about helping people. And, well, yeah, that's true, but you don't necessarily need government to do it. And in fact, the one example that we have, or one of the examples that we have in the Bible is the Good Samaritan. And here you had somebody who basically, to call somebody a Samaritan would have been like a racial slur, right? So you have somebody who rises up above what would have been sort of the social norms as an individual to help another individual. You know what I mean? There was nothing governmental about that at all. And, you know, that's just sort of a reminder that that's what Jesus was talking about, individuals helping one another. And we also have to remember that, you know, would Jesus have been in favor of a big government solution to anything? I don't think so. Remember, Jesus was the victim of the state, after all. I mean, the Pharisees and the Roman government were basically in collusion to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to imagine somebody in that situation being in favor of a big government solution to much of anything, or to think the government could have been trusted to do anything right. And so, you know, when my friend brought this up, I kind of threw that at him too, you know. But I mean, under that law back then, basically it was mob rule. So if anything, like, collectivism would have been viewed as probably a bad thing, right? I mean, oh, everybody said that Jesus was guilty and therefore he should die. Well, I mean, what kind of governmental solution is that? You know, that's just, I don't think that that's kind
sounds
of
like your New Year's resolution should be to get new friends.
I know. Well, you know, so, but no, I think the Judeo-Christian worldview comes through a lot, you know, not just in the Gospels, but in Proverbs and everything about individuals helping one another in that. And so, And by the way, then they'll always say, like, you know, liberals often say that, well, Jesus would have been a socialist from an economic perspective too, but we don't have any evidence of that either. In fact, the one parable of the three talents suggests something really different. So it's like, you know, to remind people of the parable. I mean, so the first guy is given one talent, another guy is given two, another guy is given three, and when Jesus comes back, or when the guy who gave him comes back, the one guy has buried the, let's call it a dollar, because it's actually different, but let's say it's a dollar, and the other guy took the $2 and kind of made a little bit of money, and the third guy took the three talents and $3, let's say, and doubled the money or whatever. And who gets the praise? The guy who doubled the money.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who made a little bit of money gets a little bit of praise, but the guy who just buried the money has wasted money.
Yeah, and didn't he, to the guy with the one talent, he said, just give it to the other guy that doubled it.
So that's right. Good.
There you go. There's the tax cuts benefiting the rich again.
Well, in that case, though, the guy who refused to work or refused to be productive with that little bit of money that he was given, you know, he would, you know, eventually experience the gnashing of teeth and basically was told that he'd be going to hell. So we have that parable, which suggests something very different from socialism from Jesus. So, but you know, socialists, you know, also, if you read Marx, socialists believe that people can be perfected.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as Christians, we don't believe that at all.
Right.
And so it's a complete – it's always interesting to get a socialist into this conversation because, of course, you know, communism and socialism, they're atheists in the first place. So, you know, when they start to bring up Jesus, they're just like on really shaky ground because they don't even understand. Like, no, people cannot be perfected.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they think so through government. They think that through collectivism that people can somehow be perfected. We know differently.
Yeah, the thing that whenever I hear that same argument, I say that, you know, you're saying perfected by whose standard? Because if it's your standard and it's different than what that person has, you're going to have to coerce them into the correction. It's like when we have political correctness or the right way of speaking or thinking, you say, well, that's only done by coercion. That doesn't exactly fit into the Jesus mold of anything. You know, perfection can only be done if you force people to do things your way, and of course, it'll still fail.
Right, yeah. Right. So I think the bottom line is that we see a lot about from Jesus about freedom
mm-hmm.
in the Gospels. We see nothing about collectivism. So,
right.
You know, the people who throw out that argument that Jesus would have been a socialist or a Democrat or been in favor of big government solutions, I don't see any evidence of it
mm-hmm.
anywhere in the Gospels or anywhere in the Bible.
Yeah.
I wonder how he would have stood on abortion. That's always a good good question to say, Wesson, you're so interested in what Jesus thinks. Yeah. How do you think he would feel about that? That's usually when the conversation
ends.
Well,
they never know. Well, they don't know because they haven't read the Gospels
of course.
Most of the time, so they wouldn't even know if there was anything said in there.
Well, it's bumper sticker philosophy.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. So what else, Kent? What else do you have?
Well, I think that the one more thing, you know, another prediction for next year, I think we're going to have that Supreme Court decision on the cake baker.
Yes, we are.
And I think it's going to come down on our side. I think, though, that, you know, as Christians, we need to understand that that argument's going to be won on the argument of free speech, not on freedom of religion. I think mm-hmm. that it's, you know, sort of a side benefit that there's a sort of a religious aspect to this that we're going to benefit from, but the court argument has had to be and needs to be on free speech because the court has already said that you can't use your religion to discriminate against a different class of people. Whether that ruling was correct or not, who knows? But, like, you know, that's a different argument. But in this case, I think that the way that Justice Kennedy and the others, I think it could even be some of the more liberal members of the court could come around, even Ruth Bader Ginsburg could come around to an argument that was narrowly focused on the freedom of expression when mm-hmm. When a person is asked to take their art, decorating a cake, that is, to express a view that they disagree with fundamentally. So mm-hmm. I think that we're going to see a positive outcome of this. Of course, it won't come around till about June. I can't,
I can't
wait till the end of June when all the like the last week of June when all those decisions come out.
You know, you're always surprised by the way things go. But I like in my head, I go, I can't see how this could possibly go. But you know, side on the go with the baker because you think, well, how long before they make speech mandatory? If they say, you know, not only okay, that was an actual physical cake decorating, but now since it is a form of speech. Why couldn't they go and make somebody say, we need you to speak favorably of something that you disagree with because you
vocalize it.
You have to vocalize
it.
I mean, we're
right.
that close to vocalizing right. it because this is an artistic expression. What's next? Well, your actual voice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, we can't go down the route of not serving a cake to somebody just because we disagree with their lifestyle or something. The court has already said if you've opened up your business to the public and you're selling cakes, for example, then you need to sell a cake to anybody who wants. And the great thing about this particular baker is that they already have. They've already made cakes for gay couples and all this. So the opposite side doesn't have the argument to say that they've just been generally discriminatory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kent, thanks for coming in. I know you've got a day off today, so you came
in
anyway.
I'll be in the office.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thanks so much, Dr. Kent Kaiser. It is 4 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back with more. Thank you very much to Dr. Kent Kaiser for coming into studio and my guest, Patrick Albanese, who just so happens to still be in the studio. I can't seem to get rid of him, but...
I thought I'd never leave.
I thought you'd never leave, too. Yeah. We've got a great second hour coming up. Ben Johnson from the Acton Institute will be with us on our studio line, as well as Mr. David Wheaton, which I cannot wait for. Psalm 103 says, "Praise the Lord, my soul, all my inmost being, praise his holy name. Praise the Lord, my soul, and forget not all his benefits." Benefits. We have lots of benefits in him. We'll take a short break. Hour two is next. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.